Some might wonder about how critical the role of secular teachers are in the chinuch of our children. And I've always had the perspective, especially, or maybe that's why it has to be that way, when the secular staff is me'anshei shlomeinu, as we say, that we're all of the same commitment, we're all committed to Yadus, and we're all looking for the same results in our students. That makes all the difference in the world. Unfortunately, I hear horror stories about the damage that some secular teachers who are not me'anshei shlomeinu, the things they say, the topics they discuss, the ideas they espouse, the role models that they provide are shocking and oftentimes just so countering everything that we're trying to do. And the end result sometimes is a lot of damage. So ashreichem that you're all of the same mind and really share the same goal. But I'd like to talk just briefly about how I think that secular teachers can have a tremendous reinforcement and sometimes maybe even a more direct hashpah on their students. First of all, you know, we tend to discount a little bit the Limudei Chol teachers in the way they act and in the commitments they have, because that's their job. That's a little bit subtle. No, that nobody really verbalizes this, but you know, you gotta take the morah with a grain of salt because that's what she's paid to do. Yet when they see secular teachers who have a secular background, not judging anybody's level of background or not, whether that's, you know, whatever that means. But their job is not here to teach Torah. Their job is to teach whatever the secular subjects are. And therefore, as a role model, they become more of a wow, this is not, you're not getting paid to act this way. Not that the morning teachers are, but this is natural. It means that this is the way B'nai Yisrael act. This is the way we should all be acting. You don't just have to be a Torah studies teacher, Limudei Kodesh teacher, in order to live this type of a lifestyle. So I think in a very direct and sometimes a little more subtle way, you can have a tremendous hashpah on your students. I think that not only do they look at you as role models, but when you develop a positive relationship, they can want to identify with you in a way that sometimes can make all the difference in their lives. There are some students that are not as successful in the Limudei Kodesh as they may be in the Limudei Chol. There are some students that for some reason resist a little bit some of that they're getting in the Limudei Kodesh, where in the Limudei Chol they're more open. There are some students that feel, well, this is more practical, this is what you have to know in life, and therefore, so your influence is very powerful because, look, I'm doing these things, we're not in that religious business, so to speak, and yet, this is the way we live, this is the role model that we provide, this is the example that we teach, can be very, very powerful. But I think it goes much further than that. I'd like to talk for a few moments about happiness. Because I think happiness is really the universal desire of every human being. Everybody wants to be happy. And we live in a world, unfortunately, where we don't really know what happiness is. They've taught us that pleasure equals happiness. It doesn't seem to work because a lot of the people that are constantly pleasurizing themselves don't seem to be too happy. Not if you look at the bills that they pay for mental health professionals, not if you look at the alcohol consumption, not if you look at the drug consumption, not if you look at the suicide rates, v'chule. It doesn't seem to do it for them. Society has been misleading us a little bit. Happiness can be best defined, probably the highest level of happiness is osher. Osher. Aleph Shin Resh is the Shoresh. That Shoresh, it seems, means Ishur, validation. Happiness means feeling good about myself. When I feel good about myself, I'm happy. In fact, when I imbibe the pleasures from the outside, it doesn't make me feel good about myself. In fact, I feel like trash because I can't get through the day and my insides seem so empty and I'm so frustrated and depressed unless I take in more and more and more and more from the outside. And that sends the message that inside, nothing there. I'm not worthy. I don't feel good about myself. So it's extremely important for happiness to feel good about ourselves. I believe that teachers as yourselves, can have a unique role in making our students feel good about themselves and making them happy. And then when we do that, then the role model that we present, then the example that we represent, then the way we lead our lives becomes more and more influential and attractive to them because we, you, are the source of their happiness. How do we go about doing this? Well, one of the things that shocks people sometimes is, and I'm fond of quoting it, if not just for the shock value, but I think it's so relevant and important. The Rambam says that the following lashon, Kishem Sheharav Chayev, Shehatalmid Chayev L'chabedes Harav, the student is obligated, and applies to teachers as well, obligated to respect the Rebbe, Kach Horav Tzorich L'chabed Es HaTalmid U'Lekorvoi. So too the Rav must honor, respect, and draw close the student. Now, respect has an amazing power to make a person feel good about himself, because why does the teacher respect me? What do I mean respect? Not stand up when they walk into the room, but they respect my time. If I have a big test in another department, they're not going to burden me tonight. They respect my feelings. They talk to me with care, with concern, with respect, without putting me down, with no negative. No, they're very, 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 very upbeat in the way they speak with me. They speak with love. They speak with warmth. They speak with friendship. And also, I respect your questions. Now, here, the questions that you're asked are usually not about Yadus, but they're questions where young girls have the opportunity to either feel good about themselves because they asked a good question and because their question was respected and was responded to in a positive way, or to feel disenfranchised and destroyed about themselves because, no, oh, come on, come on, who are you kidding? That's not a question. What's the matter with you? Where have you been? Why weren't you listening? How could you ask such a stupid question? In the inimitable words of a certain machanach, and I certainly won't say the name, I don't even want to say it in a way that gives it away, somebody asked a question, and this machanach said, you're not even speaking stupidity. Ad kedei kach. Then a few minutes later, I don't know where this young boy got the courage to ask another question. And then the machanech told him, now you're speaking stupidity. Wow. Destroyed. It's all over. You have the opportunity when you treat their questions, albeit in math or in science or in English or in social studies or whatever it may be, with respect. Hey, that's an interesting question. It's a very creative point. I never thought of that. You know, I'm not even sure of the answer. And by the way, there's a tendency when we don't know the answer to feel a little bit unnerved and threatened and try to make up some Baba Maisa. I don't know if any of you here do that. In fact, I shouldn't accuse anyone, but sometimes we do that. I don't know the answer. It's a legitimate answer. But It's a good question. I will look into it and I'll find out the answer. And I show you the respect and I take you seriously to pay attention to what's bothering you and to let you know that it's legitimate and to let you know that it's serious enough that I am ready to look into it and to get back to you, and get back to you we must. So here's a very simple way we can make them feel good. You know, there's a certain atmosphere in a classroom that can also validate students. You know, one of the most devastating things that we do is criticism. We're very into criticism. I don't know if you people are, I hope not. I don't know if the secular staff feels the need to do that as much as the Limudei Kodesh staff, because they're dealing with a level of commitment and acceptance that they can't allow to get too far out of hand. But do you know that Yaakov Avinu apologized to Reuven on his deathbed? And he said, you know, the reason that I didn't reprimand you sooner in terms of what you did with the mice in the Chumash, says, was because I was afraid that if I reprimanded you earlier on, you would leave me lidobek be'esov ochi, to join Esov's yeshiva. Yaakov was afraid that if he reprimanded Reuven before on the deathbed, it's almost over, he's not going to see him again, it's his last will and testament, I don't know, it's easier. He was afraid if he had reprimanded him in his lifetime, and Reuven had done tshuva for that, and Reuven was a tzaddik, and Yaakov knew how to reprimand in the softest way. He was afraid he would leave him to join forces with Esav. Criticism can be devastating because it takes away, reduces the respect that I have. Now, sometimes we have to, but we have to be so careful. Have to be so careful that it's done in private, not in public. The worst thing. And even when it's done, we don't put the person down. You know, there's a beautiful vort I once heard from Rav Palm, Zichrono Livracha. He was describing his Rebbe, Rav David Leibowitz, how his approach to chinuch was. And he said, there's two ways to give teichocha. One is to say, you're such a chosh of a person. How do you do such a little thing? Or how could you do such a terrible thing? Either build up the chet or build up the person. So he says, if you build up the chet, oh, you did such a terrible thing, when he walks away, he'll say, ah, it wasn't so terrible, what am I getting all excited about? You build up the person, you're so choshev, how could you do? That's not good, he's not going to forget it. That he's going to keep focused on. And bechlal, we never blame the person. We never criticize the person, we criticize the action that was mistaken. And we look at it as a mistake. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity to do tshuva, and we have to give them that opportunity too. And we have to accept it. We have to accept it as if it never happened. And forget about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wipes away our averus as if they never took place. The lashon that the Mesilas Yeshayahu uses, Akiras HaRotzoin, Kakiras HaMaisa. It's as if it never took place. We have to be able to have these attitudes with our students in order to be able to make them happy, show respect, foster a positive relationship. And relationship is very important. When a teacher takes the time out to make sure that a student who looks like she didn't get it can make sure that she understands. Maybe a telephone call sometimes at home, I know that's very difficult. Maybe a few minutes after class, whatever it may be, but somebody cares about me. And that love, and that respect, and that caring validates, makes them feel good about themselves, and it's a different world. And I'll tell you something else. That validation helps for classroom discipline. Because if I know how much the teacher respects me, I want to cooperate. I don't want to disappoint that person. I don't want to act in a way that undermines her influence in the classroom. So it helps on so many, so many, many different levels. I think that there's something else that we have to be aware of. Sometimes the students are on better religious behavior in the Limudei Kodesh than in the Limudei Chol. Because, you know, this is part of the curriculum, and here it's not. And sometimes we can see in the secular studies problems that maybe were not even noticed in the Limudei Kodesh program. And therefore we should feel a sense of responsibility to watch out for these things and to bring these issues to the attention of the appropriate administrator or Hanhola member or whoever would be the appropriate source. And because we may be seeing things that others don't see. Worst case scenario, we saw something that was seen by someone else and they're already taking care of it. And sometimes it needs two people to come and say the same thing, and then all of a sudden there's a greater hechel to take care of it because it seems everybody recognizes this. It's not just a matter of opinion. We have to feel that sense. Ultimately, we're all responsible. You know, the din of Aravus makes every Jew responsible for every fellow Jew in anything that we can do about it. So we certainly don't have a right to say, well, my job is just the secular studies, and therefore I'm not concerned about the Ruchnius. The contract as a secular study does not obligate you, as a secular teacher does not obligate you to be concerned about the Ruchnius. But the Kabbalas Arvus and Hagrizim Harevel, when we went into Eretz Yisrael, the Kol Yisrael Harevim Zebozeh, that obligates all of us. And we're all equally responsible. Anyone who can do anything about any fellow Jew's situation is equally responsible. And that's a heavy responsibility. And I think often the secular teachers are in a position to see things and maybe recommend things and maybe sometimes even do things that are that otherwise might not be taken care of. So I think we have to look at our role as a much more of a caring concern, watching out for the total student, being in contact with the administration so that problems can be properly addressed and hopefully ameliorated. And this, I think, is an achrayus that we all have. I think that as Frum, Shemrei Teru Mitzvahs, secular teachers, we also have a very special role as role models. And we are also under scrutiny from our students. And if they see inconsistencies in the way we talk, in the way we act, in the way we deal with them, in the Beinonim L'Chaveroi, in the sensitivities, in the midos, in or even in just how much we're machshiv the whole moysed and the whole chinuch that's going on here, that can be have a devastating effect on them, because they look up to us as role models. And as a role model, we have to be very, very careful. We're living in a fish tank, you know, where everybody's looking. And we can't say if a student complains about a certain teacher that you do a certain thing, the administrator can't say, well, what can we do, Nebuch, you know? The Goyim don't understand that. The non-from Jews don't understand that. We don't have that luxury. We're dealing with all that we're all on the same page. And therefore, we have to be very, very extra careful in what we show. I just want to say a word that I mentioned this morning. I think it's very important. A word about hypocrisy. Forgive me, I'm not accusing anyone, and I'm sure that it's barely, if ever, relevant. I think it's something to keep in mind. When Esav was approaching Yaakov, and Yaakov was mispalo to Hashem, one Medrash says, that his tefillah went like this, Rabbeinu Shalalem, in your Torah, you're going to write a love. The mother, the offspring with the mother, cannot be shechted on the same day. If you allow Esav to destroy my wives and my children on the same day? And he says the following language, HaTorah she'ata osid litein b'Sinai miyikrebo. The Torah that you're going to give at Har Sinai, no one's going to want to read it because you're a hypocrite. You say, and then you act in just the opposite way. You know, they say that Aristotle was giving a very scholarly lecture about some moral principle. And the next day, they saw him doing the very thing that he railed against the day before. And they asked him, Mr. Aristotle, Professor Aristotle, how you talking? He says, today I'm not Aristotle. Today I'm not Aristotle. That deritz doesn't work. So we're role models, and we have to be careful. And we have to be able, we have to be sure that when we exhibit in the classroom the care, the sensitivity, the respect, the love, the concern, the dedication, the devotion, that's expected of us, because otherwise there's a sense of hypocrisy. And since we are of the same Shomrei Torah u'mitzvos, then it's a terrible reflection. And that word of HaTorah she'ata osid litein b'Sinai miyikrebo might very well be a comment that they would make, a feeling that they would have. I'd like to talk for a moment about the importance of midos. The essence of all the mitzvahs is to refine human character. The Medrash says, loinitnu, as the Medrash I think in Parshas Lech Lecha, loinitnu ha-mitzvahs elo litzaref b'en esabriyos. The mitzvahs were only given for one purpose, to refine human character. That's all. That's what it was all about. Every mitzvah, refining human character. And that's the tachlis of everything. The Goyin is quoted. It's not an exact quote. It's a sort of a paraphrase in Eben Shloimeh, but it says, Im lav tikun hamidos, lo malichayim. If not for tikun hamidos, refining my midos, what's the purpose of life? That's really what the Torah is all about. And we have to be sensitive to that with our students in the classroom. We can't tolerate things that are inappropriate. Not only because they're inappropriate towards the learning environment and the discipline in the classroom, but because they're inappropriate because the student is learning to act in a way that's so unbecoming and so inappropriate for a Bas Yisrael. And I think that it behooves a secular teacher who sees something like this to think about what can we do to try to improve the situation. Now, a head-on collision will not improve the situation. And I'm putting this person down, your midos are atrocious. That never helped anybody. But sometimes a little talk about awakening a sensitivity. Like, you know, I think so-and-so was very offended. I know what you meant. You didn't mean anything by it. But I think so-and-so was so offended. I noticed her face turned colors. And privately, quietly, when no one is around, sometimes feeling the achrayus to try to help them refine their midos can be very important. And by the way, not every teacher in every class, in every subject, sees the same lack of midos because those are circumstantial. They come and go. It depends on, well, sometimes you see it all across the board, but very often it's something that when you have an opportunity, we have that achrayus. And their midos is so important. One of the biggest problems today in chinuch in general is the lack of midos. You know, I don't know if you have that problem, but one of the biggest feelings of chilul Hashem is when they hire secular teachers in the yeshiva, and they're not Jewish or they're not religious, and they say and they feel that their public school students behave much better than these yeshiva bochers. Such a chilul Hashem. It's just to hear, just to think. And you know something? They're not always wrong. And it's a terrible thing. So I think you're in a position, hopefully they don't behave any worse, but I think you're in a position to really try to help them, to guide them. And we should know that if it's done right, if it's done with love, if it's done out of sincerity and caring, not out of a power struggle and, you know, the student's been acting inappropriate with me and now I feel I got to get her back, it's appreciated. Everybody wants to be good, especially if feeling good about myself is the definition of happiness. You're helping me to be happy. You're making me happy. I appreciate you very much. It's a sense of achrayus that we have to keep in mind. I'd like to mention something else as well. And I don't mean this in a way that the Limudei Kodesh staff or program needs this. But it's very important to endorse the learning that they're learning in the Limudei Kodesh as well. In other words, it's almost as if we all have a responsibility for the total learning situation of our students. Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say that if they're offering secular studies in the yeshiva, then they have to make sure that they do it properly. Because anything our students do should be done properly. Otherwise, we're teaching them a certain slovenness, a certain atzlus, a certain irresponsibility, which is just terrible. And here I think each one has to reinforce the other. I would say that the Limudei Kodesh should give the message that what they're doing in the afternoon is very important. And the Limudei Chol should give the message that what they're doing in the morning is very important. And when we hear, they share with us a thought that they learned, and wow, that's beautiful. Wow, that's what you're learning in the morning. That's beautiful. Be mechazek it, rather than sometimes you say, oh, that's what you're learning in the morning. You know, I'm sure you don't do that. But it's a real opportunity for each group to be mechazek the other. And then you have an institution where people can flourish. We're all marching to the same tune. You know, they say that if 10,000 soldiers will march on a bridge in unison with the same step, the bridge will shake. It could be a bridge that's solid, never. But unison, it's called the, what's it called? With R? Resonance. Resonance. When everyone is marching to the same tune, it resonates a power. And I think you people have to be part of that. We're all marching to the same tune. There's a camaraderie between the departments. There's an approval between the departments. There's a common goal between the departments. Our goals are the same. And we all share those goals. And we want to help each one to be more successful, to better fulfill those goals. And I believe that that can make a major difference in our students' lives. I think that oftentimes, and I'm just guessing at these things because I don't know what you face, but I do have an idea about what goes on out there. Oftentimes you may get complaints about another teacher, about a Limudei Kodesh teacher, you know, because you're sort of a safe zone when it comes to that. So it's very important. Now, we can't lie. We can't, can't justify everything. But we can certainly try to help them to be malamed zchus, or sometimes to show them why they're misunderstanding, why they don't understand the whole parsha, or to guide them, say, hey, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but why don't you speak directly to that teacher and see what she has to say about it, and see what the issue really is. Because if we hear things, and we're not supportive, or we're not at least directing our students in the right direction, then we could be undermining the program, and that's something that nobody wants to do. I want to speak for a moment about the schus that you have in the work that you do. You know, we could say, well, we're only secular teachers, and we're only doing, you know, secular work, it's government regulations, it's not so important, it's not so, but it's really not true. Because many, if not most, of our students wouldn't be here unless there was a strong secular department. And therefore, we're serving, we're allowing the entire influence of this beautiful Moisid to affect them because we're providing all of their needs. And you have to hold your heads high and be very proud of the fact that you are providing those needs and you're a part of that team. And this is a critical ingredient. And I think that also we have to look and recognize that we're part of creating an atmosphere in a school. Let's say, for example, and this is just a wild, outlandish example, that one department in school is extremely nice and supportive and friendly and loving and kind and respectful, and the other one is obnoxious. You know what that's going to do? That's not going to say, oh, in the morning or in the afternoon, it's one way, and at the opposite time, it's the other way. That's going to say, I can't stand this school. It's stupid, it's crazy, it's evil. It's unless they feel comfortable in the whole program, unless they look up to and love and appreciate and respect and feel comfortable with their teachers in both divisions, then the school experience is not a positive one. And if the school experience is not a positive one, that sows the seeds of rebellion. That's really what it's all about, because I can't stand this school. Okay, so where am I going to go? I'm going to go to a school where, whatever, maybe, I don't know what your options are here in town, but this is something. So we're all part of this team. And it's really like we're playing a critical, critical role. I think that when it comes to discipline, we also have to be very careful in what we do. Very often, discipline becomes the hardest challenge. Again, I don't know what your problems are here, but discipline often becomes a very, very big challenge because on the one hand, for the benefit of the class, you gotta do something. For the benefit of the individual, maybe the best thing would be not to look at, to ignore it until later, to do something else, but we're torn. So I want to suggest that in Chazal, we find a very interesting concept, which I believe can be applied to discipline as well. The Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not give people punishment. Doesn't inflict punishment. What do you mean? And the Medrash gives a moshel to a doctor. A doctor says, listen here, if you eat this, you're going to get sick. You may die. If you eat this, you're going to be healthy and well. And now it's your choice. And that's a very subtle but profound difference. They know that this is my choice. I'm given the choice to do good or bad, to get a good consequence, a good result, or a bad consequence, and it's all up to me. There's a guy who wrote a book. His name is Lee Cantor, written many years ago. I think it's called Assertive Discipline, who seems to use this principle. And but what he says is very logical, at least in this part. He says, choose a number of rules. And by the way, the less the rules, the better the chance of them following them. If you have 469 rules, good luck to you, because nobody will even have the time to read the list, let alone to incorporate it into their lifestyle. But if you have 3, 4, 5 maximum, this is what must be done in my classroom. And it's very clear the consequences. Educationally sound, rational, beneficial consequences to teach a lesson. If you do this, this is what you have to do. If you do this, this is what happens. If you do this, this is what happens. Then what can happen is that we don't have conflict anymore. You chose a consequence. You chose to do this, and you know very well, maybe it's written all over the board, I don't know. You chose to, if you do this, this is what happens. So you chose the consequence.
and there's much less. I'm not going to be naive enough to say there won't be any fighting, but there's much less because it's pretty straightforward. If you can negotiate these rules and consequences with your class, negotiate is a harsh word. Teachers don't like that word. Parents don't like that word. Personally, I do. But let's say not negotiate, but discuss with them and explain to them the reason that we need this rule and the reason that we need this consequence. Then I think you have a whole different chance of really keeping this class under control, because you minimize the conflict. It's very clear up front. We all know it. We even all agreed upon it. And it minimizes to a great extent the friction in the behavior. And when we can do that, the class functions better, and we don't have to have power struggles. Power struggles, mamish, make a teacher look weak and send a very negative message. And I believe that something like this can be very, very helpful in avoiding such power struggles. I think it can really make a major difference. But I touched on something else, which I think is also very important. Whatever systems or rules we set up, we should set them up with explanation. If they're not rational, then don't have them. And if they are rational, explain them. And don't be afraid, as so many people say, well, if I give the explanation, they're going to argue with you. Yeah, they might. But it's worth it, because you're asking something that's reasonable. You're defending and saying, hey, this is necessary for you to learn. This is necessary to run a classroom. This is necessary, otherwise the whole system's going to fall apart. And when we do that, then they're on board, then they appreciate, then it's a whole different environment. And the goal has to be avowed, stated clearly. Everything we do here is for your benefit, not for us. I don't benefit when this class sits there quietly and sleeps through the lesson. I benefit when you learn. And the only benefit that I have when you learn is because you're learning, not because I get anything from it. And when they know, that's it, I'm giving, I care. It's all about you. We want you to succeed. You need this for success. You're not doing me any personal favors. I get paid the same way. I don't get involved in your paycheck, but I get involved the same way. I get paid the same way whether you learn or you don't learn. But I'm concerned about you. These types of things, I think, can add to a certain a positive atmosphere, positive learning atmosphere in the classroom that could very often be very, very helpful. There are classes where they have an opportunity to discuss hashkafa. I don't assume in a math class that's done. I don't know today. Maybe there's the hashkafa of mathematics. I'm not familiar with what that is. But in an English class, in a literature class, in a social studies class, certainly maybe in a science class, there's room for a lot of discussion. We have to be very careful that not only do we give over what's correct, what's right, but we have to view it as an opportunity to have a positive influence on them. Some teachers today, I understand, again, I don't know too much about what's going on, certainly not at the elementary level. I understand there are textbooks that have very positive things to read, or readers, whatever they call them, rather than just reading some garbage that somebody wrote who knows when. So these are things we have to keep in mind. We have opportunities to influence our students, and we also have to keep in mind the negative, decadent influences that they are exposed to every single day. The outside world is upon us. The outside world is here right in the palm of our hand. And it has never been so decadent. We never lived in a society where it's being debated whether it's legal to murder a baby as it's coming out of its mother's womb. That's next. We live in a society where not too far in the distant future will not only marriage be considered the things that they're considering today, but it's even going beyond to other species. Mark my words, San Francisco was the first for that to happen. And it's a crazy world. It's a crazy world. It's all politics. There's no integrity. Politicians are liars. The people that reach political office should really be in jail. And this is what we're exposed to. We don't have what to look up to. I'll never forget. When I lived in Los Angeles, I had a pair of shoes that I brought to an old Italian shoemaker. The sole and the body was separated. And I asked him if he could sew it, because I loved these shoes. They were so comfortable. And he says, I can't do a good job. It's not going to stick. I'm not going to do it for you. So he said, but if you want, I'll send it to the old country. He was an old Italian man. I'll send it to the old country. For that, it'll be good enough. I said, okay, fine. You say you can't fix it, you can't fix it. 6 months later, I walk into this man's shoemaker, and he's sitting there. Where have you been? I'm waiting for you. What happened? He says, I fixed it, and it worked. I didn't send it to the old country. I'm giving it back to you. How much? $1. I said, what? I would have paid $100 for those shoes. No, it was $1 worth of work, and it happened to work. People had a pride in their work. People had honesty. People had integrity. Today it's gone, gone, gone. It doesn't exist. And we have to compensate for this. And we have to use every opportunity that we have in the literature that we discuss, in the science that we discuss. Science is making this world into an insane place. And usually, after a while, they realize their mistake and they come on to other mistakes. And this is the way it goes. We have to be able to convey these ideas to our students. They have to hear it. You know, we live in a world where science for a while, I think it's changing now, science for a while was like the gold standard of wisdom. Science says, all of a sudden they realize, maybe 10, 20 years ago, science says, but you have to know who paid for the study. Because science doesn't say anything accurate. Remember Dr. Fauci with his science? Or maybe you never heard about him because you're over here, but you know, his science. He speaks in the name of science, and now they realize what a phony he was. You know, like, this is the world. You people have secular teachers. We're dealing with them and talking, whether it's literature, whether it's current events, whether it's, I don't know what you do, whether it's writing things, and get them thinking straight, to put their heads on straight. Let them get it right. Don't let them get caught up in the insanity and the evil, the depravity, the decadence, the stupidity of our society. And I think that, in that sense, as secular teachers, you may have more of an opportunity to influence even than the Limudei Kodesh teachers. I'd like to mention something else, which I think it's hard, I know, but when we talk about validation, there's nothing as validating as a teacher that likes me, a teacher that respects me, a teacher that seems to enjoy talking to me, seems to have a special connection to me. And these things, you know, sometimes it requires an out-of-school phone call. Sometimes it may require an invitation for Shabbos. Sometimes, I don't know what it may require. And there may be protocols that deal with these things which tell us what we should do, what we shouldn't do. But we should be aware that that relationship can be so beneficial. That when we have a positive relationship with our students and with our class, you know, teachers talk about relationships with the class. There are certain things that if the general atmosphere becomes pleasant, the general atmosphere becomes one of respect and mutual respect, And by the way, the best way for a teacher to get respect, I'll never forget, I was invited once to talk. There was a school that they felt the students weren't respecting the teachers. So they invited me to come and to speak about that topic to the teachers. And I really wasn't excited. I found out it was a preschool. So I told them, I said, I have a very simple formula. I don't know what you need me to come and speak there. Tell the teachers to respect their students, and their students will be much more likely to respect them. You model respect, you show respect, you make me feel good, I want to reciprocate. And that really is, I think, a very basic lesson. I'd like to take this just a few more moments. I don't want to keep you much longer. I'd like to just mention a few more points that I think are pertinent. You should pray for your students. Very important. You know, you want them to succeed. Not just because it makes you look good, which it does, but you want them really to succeed. If they don't succeed, the students that don't succeed are broken. And who knows what devastating damage could be done long term just because they didn't succeed. Well, besides helping them to succeed, which we'll talk about in a moment, but praying for them to succeed. We should know all their names. We should know their mother's names. We should daven for them. Very important, especially those that are having trouble. Because, you know, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, when the Bayis Rishon, the Beis HaMikdash, was on the verge of being destroyed, and he had spent his whole career trying to avert that churban, finally sent a delegation to Huldah HaNaviyo. She was a prophetess, a minor prophetess. Yirmiyahu was the Novi of the generation. But he sent a delegation that Huldah should pray, because Noshim Merachmas Yosef. Women have a certain, almost a monopoly on Rachmonas. They feel much more emotionally, much more deeply, much more pained, the Rachmonas of the situation. And I think as teachers and as women, I think there's a lot that you people can do in terms of helping the Talmidos through tefillah. But also, we have to be looking at what it is that they need to succeed. Very often I hear from people, I say, oh, this kid, she's just stupid. Well, they don't use that word. They, you know, she's not smart. She has weak, you know, limited intelligence. So I'm very skeptical about Jewish people with limited intelligence. I mean, we all have limited intelligence, but I'm very skeptical. You know, they've called us every rotten name in the book except stupid Jew. I never heard the epithet stupid Jew. Jews are smart. So the chances is the kid is smarter than you realize. Chances is she can't understand one way, another way. She has her own learning style. She has ADD. She can't concentrate. She can't do it. I'm so proud as a parent that one of my daughters walked into a fifth grade class and they told her, this girl is a zero. She never got more than a zero on a test. That's very unlikely. Very strange. Very suspicious. And my daughter discovered that she couldn't take a written test. Just some psychological quirk. She started testing her orally, and practically overnight she became an A student. She knew all the answers. Just couldn't take a written test. We have to be alert. We have to see what's going on. When there's a problem, we have to figure it out. Don't assume that the kid just can't do it. That's highly unlikely. That's the most unlikely of all the scenarios. And different styles, different capabilities. Maybe we're going too fast. Maybe it has to be modified. Sometimes they can't see. They can't read. They're dyslexic. Sometimes they can't hear properly. Who knows what the problem is? And sometimes they just need a different style of learning. It's something that I think we really have to feel a true sense of achrayus. Otherwise, we're not going to maximize the impact and the influence and the success of our students. I think that's most of my ideas on this topic for you. If there are any questions or any dissenting opinions, please take a shot at it. We'll see what happens. Okay. That means you're afraid, or that means I did a good job, or you want to go home. Which is it? Okay, anyway, I wish all of you hatzlocha, really. Hashem should help. You're in a critical role. You could have a major influence on your students. Hashem should help that you should be successful at it.